Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to lean on you to like prompt me a little bit because I haven't done this in a while. Or maybe I have, whatever.
Well, I do
Welcome.
have both of the polls ready if you choose
Yes.
to go down the favorite intention
Yeah.
polling direction.
And we also have Jeff joined, but Mr. Burns will call him until we can see his face. I love the avatar. Okay, so let me just ask a quick question. How many of you had a chance? I don't know, Suzanne and Maria, if you got the articles, and did folks have a chance to read them?
Got the articles, only managed one of them. Apologies.
That's okay. The first one was a doozy. So sometimes there's really short ones, but sometimes when they come later, in the list, it takes you a while to get through the first one. Well, feel free to participate because I think we have good conversations outside the context of the article or within the context, but you don't have to have read it. So maybe I will just run through, I'm not going to give a summary of, I'll give like the briefest summary known to man of all of these articles. The first one was The Challenges of Becoming a Less Hierarchical Company, which was an HBR article, and about what the challenges are for flatter structures and decentralization. And they went through like a lot of the things in structure and then the things within people that that contribute or can confuse a flatter structure. The next one was Leading the AI-Driven Organization, which I feel like is all articles nowadays. But it was about organizations keeping pace with AI, essentially. The one after that, so that was from MIT. The next one, welcome, Anthony. We're just going through the different articles. I'm giving like a very quickest summary ever. The next one was How Utopian Thinking Can Inspire Business from the INSED Knowledge group. And this was about creating space, making space for creative solutions and, kind of being in that dreaming state a little bit and not always jumping right to reality. He did also in that article, I will mention a link to a concept, another article and a concept called wise power, which we can touch on if we talk about it, but that was about emotional maturity, mental agility, and generosity of soul. So that was a little tidbit in there. The fourth one was, how do you know if your hybrid approach is working? And this kind of addressed, I wasn't really ready with my summaries here. This one kind of addressed, pitfalls and how you can tell if your hybrid plan, whatever your hybrid strategy is working. And then the last one was a short article on Ivy Global's workplace revolution. And it was where they kicked out all the managers and then came up with structures for everyone to basically have full autonomy. So we can talk about that one as a relatively small organization was my thing, but I want to cut to the chase here. Let's go through them. So why don't we take a quick poll and figure out which one we want to talk about first? So like which Tanya, whatever the poll is, what's the question? Which one had the biggest impact on you or was the most useful for you?
This one we do as your favorite.
Favorite.
It's
Okay.
the other one that we are a little
Okay.
more selective in our terminology. And I'm hoping this works because the latest update on Zoom, I set up a couple the polls a little bit differently and just was changing them as y'all were jumping on.
All right, so which did you find? I said the most useful, Tanya. But favorite or most useful?
Oh, four-way split. Five-way. All
Five-way
right.
split? How is that possible?
Well, now we just got one more person voted, so there is a leading edge,
The tiebreaker.
apparently.
All right, anyone not vote? Okay, here we go. Okay, so the winner by just a nose is The Challenges of Becoming a Less Hierarchical Company. But wow, that's interesting because we have kind of, it is pretty even. So maybe we can, I will attempt as facilitator to let us touch on each article, which has never been done before. So I don't know if it's, maybe it has, but we're going to try and do it. Okay, so let's talk about the challenges of becoming a less hierarchical company. What jumped out at you from that article? Anyone want to start? Okay, so the way we usually do this is we raise hands. It's a pretty small group today, but maybe we can do the hand raising thing anyway, just for, law and order here. All right, Jim.
What struck me the most was what was missing.
So annoying.
And that is the problems are pretty well described. The challenges are pretty well described. But it misses the fact that what is lacking for those leaders that they refer to is the information they need to make those decisions, to prioritize things, et cetera. And so what they say is that, essentially, if you break down the hierarchy, you break down the control and the cascade of commands, which is, by the way, the intent of re reducing. It's not about taking out middle layer headcount. It's about reducing latency, and the latency is typically in escalated questions and resolving misunderstandings or being able to sort true facts from made up facts.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So that wasn't in here about like when you do descale, you need to change. You also need to pair that with spreading information, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, thank
I
you.
would also have liked to have had a little bit more about some of the other things you might have considered before going flat, sort of more in the development space, and because it's quite costly. I know they mentioned it that there's a cost involved with doing this, but I would have loved them to consider a little bit of some of the other things they did beforehand to even go down the red route, because I see a lot of that going, let's just do flatter, or it's a structural issue we need to go to. I would love to have seen a little bit more about that, but I thought it was great. It's very much on the top of my head at the moment, that discussion around spans of control and layers and organization designs and trying to fight counter
Yeah.
narratives on that.
Thank you, Suzanne. And I would just pair that with, I'm going to pipe in my own comments, even though I'm the facilitator. Like what does it take to get there? But I think the other piece that they didn't say is what benefits did they get? Did they get any benefits? They never really said. Okay. Anybody else? Comments on this article? There's a lot in here. This was the heavy one. Nothing. That's it for this big heavy article. Oh, I'm going to give my other comments then, take off my facilitator hat. One of the things that I felt like was that the language was, it seemed like it was being imposed rather than participatory, because it was a lot of like, you have to go do the analysis and then solve it. So it didn't, and then it was like, and you can bring people in like towards the end of the process, but it wasn't very participatory for someone who wants to be a flat structure.
Now, this is what you described there is a very common issue of taking a diagnostic approach to an adaptive challenge. You start with all those people in the room that you don't bring them in when you've decided what the problem is and who needs to be fixed.
Well, I think so to that point, Jim, I think they also kind of skipped right over the part about why flatten? Like, what's the problem we're solving from flattening? And I, so that was the other part. Kind of to your earlier point, Jim, is like the main part of hierarchy, the reason that hierarchies develop is scope, right? Like he talked about the challenges with time horizon, but not about like scope. So when you flatten, like someone's got to be looking at the big picture still, right? So we didn't really talk about then, to your point, Suzanne, how to deal with that.
But does it have to be a hierarchy of people who are looking at the big picture, or does it need to be a collaboration of people looking at the big picture? And can you distribute the big picture?
Well,
Yeah,
right, but then, yeah, go ahead,
well,
Rich.
for me, that's what was missing too. I agree with the comment that it does a great job of painting the challenges, but there are any number of relatively well-established solutions that we all are working on. Rigorous accountabilities, shared leadership, leadership as a
a dedicated function instead of a position. All of those are what many of us are doing in organizations. And those are the solutions to many of these challenges. It was not my favorite article because I looked at it and said, yeah, okay, that's interesting.
Okay. I liked it because it laid out, I thought it, you know, well-structured in how it laid it out, but it was lacking. I agree. All right. Anybody else on the challenges of becoming a less hierarchical company?
On the positive side, I thought it was more nuanced than some of the articles I've read that would just say, you know, flatten is the problem, the solution, and the outcome of the organization. It took a little bit more of a nuanced approach to some of the discussions. So just to give it a little bit more of a flavor.
Okay, Gina's putting something in the chat. Gina, are you not able to talk? Office.
I'm able to talk, but I didn't want to interrupt. I agree with everything everybody said. I think the governance is primarily the problem. And just pointing out that I think GE had a version of it too. I was trying to look really fast, but I actually worked at Microsoft back in the day. And they had those, you know, that kind of a concept with the micro teams, and it got very competitive because it didn't have the overarching governance. So then Windows and Office ended up eating the world, and it really stalled their innovation for a while until they restructured. Their stock price didn't move for like 10 years. You know, it was like 2000 to 2008 or something like that. So that was some of the pitfalls. So I thought the same thing everybody said about the article. Didn't say what they got done, and didn't cover the governance adequately.
Hmm. All right, I'm going to go off script here and say I'm going to propose that we jump to the last article because it's about navigating growth without managers, which I feel like ties in with the hierarchy. I'm not presupposing a theme here, but that might be a good one to talk about next. So somebody voted for this one. Does anyone want to share why they liked this article or why they found it useful? Go ahead, Jim.
I actually did.
We'll do Maria and then Jim.
Yeah, I voted for that because actually in the organization that I recently joined, I'm finding that they promote a lot of people to managerial positions, but they actually didn't give them learning opportunities. So it's a lot of managers that they are not real managers. So that's why I'm very keen to understand, you know, how do you do that?
Yeah. Anybody else comments on getting rid of managers or the article, whatever?
I would draw it to holacracy. And whenever you read about how that has not worked, it's been they didn't have adequate owners. So I like that article pointed out they needed, I think it was 15 of 35, you know, some margin of people being very invested. And that was the thing that was, that it doesn't work, you know, unless you've got that number of people that are willing to step up and be owners, I think. I mean, anything I read about holacracy, that seemed to be what the sticking point was.
What does that mean, owner, in this context, Gina?
It meant the owning the framework. They talked about maintenance of the framework and robust onboarding for how they're working. And so that was what that article referred to in context. And that was the same thing that I've mostly read about holacracy is having that, you know, that you're actually willing to step up and make those decisions and help people and take the extra time to work in that fashion.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the reason I voted for it was I did have the opportunity to talk to three people: the captain of the a all women's World Cup yacht racing team, Tony Say of Zappos, and Ricardo. I can't remember his last name. Soldano, I believe. Ricardo Soldano. The book, The Maverick. Anybody familiar with that?
Similar.
That was way back in the 90s where he converted his company, or he built his company from the beginning based on holacracy. And exactly what Maria said was the binder, was that the leader, Tony, and I believe her name was Isabel, and Ricardo, they bound the organization together. They assured the accountability and the structure in conversation. And all, well, the women's Cup team, I don't know if you remember, they had the best boat and they lost every race. Oh. And the issue that they sort of derived from that was that nobody knew who was in charge. So they didn't do things quickly. They waited for somebody to figure out that it was okay for me to tell everybody else to jibe. And they kind of sort of recovered near the end. But in the other two cases with Tony Say and Ricardo was that they hired people into the company that fit the Holacracy model from the get-go. They didn't convert their companies from some kind of a hierarchy to a Holacracy. And that's why those succeeded so well.
Well, so that's okay. So let me throw that question out to you, Jim, and the group is like, so do we think it's impossible then to convert, or does it have to be, you know, from conception?
The things I read, it wasn't impossible to convert, but it had to have the eye, like Jim's describing, it had to have that eye toward very specific people for it to work. And so that was where they failed, is they just didn't recognize the type that they needed to be able to make it work.
Mm. Thank you. Anybody else?
Awesome. There might be one other thing on that I found interesting is it was in Holland and they talked about having meetings about everyone setting their own salaries. I can't imagine that transferring cultures uniformly. I mean, just some of the conversations that I've watched in various places. So the other thing that struck me in that article was I thought there's probably certain things that this can work on, but not everything. And I'm not positive. I haven't had a lot of exposure to it. Everything I have is, you know, third party and reading things. But that was the other thing that I thought might be relevant, is just being very specific about these are the decisions we're going to have this kind of model on. Other ones we're not going to, perhaps.
My other question on that article was about scale. So I know they said 170 employees, but it looked like it was really 35 that were full-time, you know, real employees. Like, what about scale? Like, what does it look like at scale? Because they're basically a democracy here with 35 people making some decisions, or a lot of the decisions. So what about when it's 400,000? So I don't know, Jim, like, you know, Zappos and Semco were bigger than 35 people.
Both of them maxed out at 150
people.
People, they maxed out. However, at Zappos, of 150 people, 148 did exactly the same job.
Okay, so
in the case of Ricardo's company, it was a family-owned company. And a large number of them were family members.
Which is maybe
Or community members. They all knew each other from the get-go.
Which may be harder, actually, but okay, we'll say.
Yes. It's harder for a whole bunch of other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the scale, I don't think it scales well at all if you've got a broad spectrum of knowledge workers. Versus doers versus inventors versus marketers, et cetera. It's just doesn't seem you can get them in a room and say, I got an idea. Let's give everybody an 18% raise. And by the way, if our sales go down by 18%, we all take a cut.
Right. So Gina, I see Gina's putting Dunbar's number in there in the thing. So, you know, the way they talk about it, is you like it would just be like the cell divides at 150, right? But you know, it's harder to do these things with a bigger org.
Yeah.
That's why we have hierarchy, because we have many 150 person orgs. And by the way, there's a podcast, I'll find it for you, Gina, somewhere, where Dunbar talks about how he didn't really mean it.
There's a few things out now. Oh, you can, but I think the point was stability. You know, it's just what you can actually get across. I mean, you know, sure you can have, you know, 1,000 connections and you'll think, oh yeah, I met that person, you don't actually have a relationship, you know, mm-hmm. that's gonna be working. So even if he said he didn't mean it, I think he maybe was not far off in theory and concept.
Yeah, totally. All right. Anything else?
Anybody know the name? There's a British professor who wrote a book. His last name is Sterling. And he wrote a book about his family of companies that he invented, where his rule was no more than 125 people in a company, and no less than 12 direct reports for anyone. And Sterling Commerce has been running under that for almost 60 years now.
Wow.
With multiple divisions and subdivisions of divisions. But I cannot remember the author's name. The last name I know for sure is Sterling. And he quoted Dunbar's number.
I have to find that podcast for you with Dunbar. We'll put it in the when Tanya sends the follow-up. All right, anything else on the navigating growth without managers? All right, I'm going to go back up to the top here. Let's see. Leading the AI-driven organization. I'm so tired of this topic, but since you all picked it, what was useful about this article? This is my whole inbox. Anyone want to share why they voted for it? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like see the response here. Why do we like this AI driven? Nobody wants to stand up. I shouldn't have. See, I
seem to so, be on.
It seems so, like. Go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say I voted for it, but simply because the topic I think is important. I didn't think the article offered much. Not to be negative, to be positive, I think it's a very important topic. And I think the challenge that I face working with leaders that tend not to be 20-something software developers, but are somewhat more mature and more fossilized, is that they're just terrified. They just, they either try and micromanage it without understanding, or they just completely hands off. I don't understand it. My IT people are doing it and I don't know what's happening. So I think the time is right for a set of guidelines. How do you work with those old line hierarchical organizations that just don't know how to manage AI? So I think it's an important topic.
So Jim, go ahead, Gina.
I was going to say, I want to second that. I think I thought the same thing. I thought this is kind of stating the obvious. I didn't get anything terribly helpful out of it. But I agree with you. You made a really good point about keeping it front and center, because what's happening is, in my view, exactly what you said, terror, but then slapping frameworks on it that aren't working. Like right. Every, you know, I see this, you know, they want to approve every machine learning module, which does not lend itself to innovation. And there seems to be a paucity of people that are able to think, hey, we could try this, we could try that. And then if you do want to try it, you're encumbered by this massive framework that is not fit for purpose. So I think it's good. I think what you said, I mean, thank you for the perspective. I thought, yeah, you're right. Let's just keep saying it over and over again. And then eventually there'll be some innovation somehow with that.
My favorite anecdote was an organization that had been trying AI for certain practices and had some hallucinations come up that really caught the attention of senior management. So they canceled the whole AI program, said, if I can't trust the results, then we're not going to do it anymore. And one of the IT people we helped give voice to, you can control what data sets it works on. And if you want customer data, just limit the data set to all your customer data. And oh wow, just something so elementary as that. And there's a lack of communication between the people that need to know and the people that do know.
Yeah. There was another call we talked about AI, and I think it was you, Jim, where we talked about, you don't have to trust it any more or less than you trust the other humans on your team, but it still can give you some information. Like, we're all fallible.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't have to ignore it. Jim,
I think that's the big discovery is that the data is relatively useless that you've got to work with from the get-go, and people have been compensating for bad data for decades. case is a global hospitality company that we worked with, where we discovered that only 4% of the room rates were in conformance with the pricing models.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was overriding the room rates. Why? Because the currency conversions were never being maintained on a timely basis.
Mm.
So all of the statistical analysis that was being done to set room rates was based on bad data.
Sounds like you learned something, though.
It did. another one we implemented with another firm, risk-based credit extension. And that said that, if there were 12 hurricanes bearing down on Florida, it's probably not a good time to open a new line of insurance policy, property and casualty insurance policies in Florida. In fact, maybe we should just bug out. And essentially, the first models out of the AI system told them that they should exit Florida, and they should plan on exiting South Carolina and Louisiana in the next 5 years, and in the next 20 years, be out of Georgia and North Carolina. Scary stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, it's when you follow it without thinking.
Yeah.
The problem. So my take on the AI article was that it just, and kind of to your point, Rich, like it was fairly generic that could be applied to any new technology, mm-hmm. not AI specific, and good, right? It should be. Like, we should not be using old thinking with new technologies in general, mm-hmm. AI or otherwise. But the AI hype is what's making me so tired.
Yeah, agreed.
So since it's a smaller group now, and also, I kind of felt like the article was written by AI. Did anyone else feel like that?
I hadn't thought of that. Probably
sort of.
Well, it came out of MIT, so that would make sense. That even if there were humans involved, it came out of AI.
Yeah.
Well, of the humans at MIT may have been on the Asperger's autistic spectrum.
Yes, exactly. So similar to a computer. The other thing, though, this is like a little nit, but I wonder if anyone else picked it up. I didn't feel like they had accurately depicted the work of Daniel Kahneman when they talked about fast and slow thinking being similar to long-term and short-term strategic planning. Like, mm-hmm. that's not really the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right. The guy's like barely cold in the ground and we're misquoting him already. I don't know. Did anyone else everyone? It's almost like write an article about AI and make sure you include Daniel Kahneman. Enter. You know.
I'm surprised they didn't get gluten free in it.
Yeah.
So no, I would concur with that. It's it's the disconnect between their understanding of what business does and what Kahneman's had to say.
Yeah.
Short-term thinking and short-term strategy are two different. Long-term thinking to drive short-term strategy is a good thing.
Right. And to say, they didn't say these words, but like, if you're going to say that their system one, right, the reptilian brain is an organization's adaptive process, that's like a whole article maybe, but you can't just sneak that in there. All right. I know we just have a few of us, but this is still fun, I hope. Last article here that we didn't talk about. How do you know? Oh, I like this one. How did you know if your hybrid approach is working? I didn't vote for it, but I did. This was kind of interesting. although I marked it as unhelpful in my reading. what did anyone think about anything with the how do you know if your hybrid approach is working? Anyone here vote for it?
It's another example of a diagnostic approach to an adaptive challenge. The organizations that I've worked with that are most successful, and I work principally with former clients, leaders who have contracted a coach, an ongoing coach, is to focus on community metrics first. Are you sustaining a strong community with your hybrid approach, or is your community breaking down because of your hybrid approach? And once you've got a stable operating community, then you can go into continuous improvement of things like productivity and speed of change and those other other aspects of it. Thoughts?
I was just looking for the book here. Sorry. I know you keep talking about the adaptive versus diagnostic or technical approach. So I just didn't, I want to make sure everyone knows that that's the, are you guys all familiar with that? That's the Ron Heifetz that you're referring to, Jim, I assume. Leadership on the line. I got it right over here someplace. But if you haven't checked that out.
That's this guy.
Oh, adaptive leadership you're quoting from. Okay, who's that guy? Is it Ron Heifetz?
That's Heifetz, yeah. Okay. So there's a network called the Adaptive Leadership Network, which meets periodically, and I'm a part of that group as well. And we're swapping ideas about adaptive leadership and organization design for technical challenges versus adaptive challenges. What's the different approach?
So I'm a huge fan of that model because I think that that's where so many things are broken. Because I mean, organizations try and apply that technical approach to adaptive challenges all the time.
And if you like that one, add this one to your list. Are you familiar with strategic doing?
No.
So this is an adaptation of adaptive leadership practices for communities.
Oh.
And they also have a weekly, they have 2 to 4 weekly web presentations, discussions about those practices.
We would love to be in the loop there, Jim.
Join.
Give us a link. Okay, give us a link if you have one. I know I sidetracked the rest of your question there because I was kind of running through that, but you talked about focusing on the community too, and instead of the some of the metrics that they were looking at.
Yeah, measure your community. If you've been doing pulse checks on community, they're usually embedded in things like in employee engagement surveys and employee satisfaction surveys. All the data is in there, and if you look at David Ulrich's community, and what each of those letters stands for, if you focus on measuring those aspects first until you've got a stable community, then you can start your improvement programs around other things like speed of change and breadth of communications and things like that.
Yeah. Anyone else comments on this article? I had a couple of notes on the flip side of what you're talking about, Jim, just on some of the purely diagnostic or technical side. But I feel like they didn't address some of the big challenges I do see companies having, not on the adaptive side, but just purely real estate. Like a lot of the things driving the hybrid working strategies are real estate. Like we want to get everyone in and using the space or so we can at least figure out if we're going to keep it, right? Like, or you know, it's pure, like nothing about business strategy. And then I think the other thing that I have found so challenging, like the article assumes that everybody's on one team. And as an agilist, we would love that to be true, but it's just not. So what we have is we have people on 3 teams and each of those 3 teams has different in-office days. So everyone's in the office for 5 days, right? So it's just, you know, come on. So it's like, oh, that's nice. It's 2 days a week for each team I'm on.
Uh-huh.
And they're all jockeying for space. So it's like on Mondays, I'm on the 21st floor. On Tuesdays, I'm on four. And on Thursdays and Fridays, I'm on seven. You know, like, so it's been really people jockeying around for space. So I don't know what the solution is there, but I think that those are some of like the real life challenges, not some of this, which seemed more theoretical.
Have you worked on liaison roles? Explicitly designing liaison roles across teams?
I mean, sure, a little.
Which is a rotating, I like to use it as a rotating position. For team members to, I'll be the liaison for 6 weeks and somebody else shifts and becomes the liaison. And the idea is to bring the information and the questions, et cetera, across boundaries using your liaisons.
Yes.
Rich, go ahead. I was working in a large joint venture that had a problem, as many do, of silos and lack of coordination. We actually put together a spectrum of coordination possibilities, all the way from just copying them on some of your internal emails. Some of the teams, that was enough. Just put us on your distribution list just so we can keep up with what's going on, all the way through what you're talking about, which is some kind of a rotating role, all the way to more formal, structured coordinating councils. And we had all three of those.
Yeah.
And the key was for the teams involved to decide what was important, what was the right way to do it. And one of the teams didn't want all the email crap, but they said, just give us access to your central workspace, just so we can every once in a while check and see what you guys are doing. So it, for me, it was an agile solution fit for purpose for whatever the teams needed.
Cool. Jeffrey, I know you've been quiet, but I just wanted to give you a little space if you had anything you wanted to share. Okay. Feel free to keep listening and pipe in whenever you want. Okay, nothing for now. Okay, great. So that was the last article that we got through in record time. We have a small group today. So one of the things that we sometimes do, since we have a few minutes, is sort of take a shot at saying, what do you think the theme was across, or what do you think the theme is across articles? Jim, I see you have your hand up.
Well, I was going to say, any thoughts on the utopian thinking?
Did I skip that one? Oh, I skipped it by accident. I'm so sorry. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Utopian thinking. How utopian thinking can inspire business leaders. Any thoughts on that, anybody?
If I didn't, I wouldn't have brought it up.
Go ahead.
One of the fundamentals of strategic doing is the idea of starting from a shared vision of the future. And to do that using principles and even potentially unachievable conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So think about a utopian future where between now and then you could change everything that needed to be changed to produce it. And what would it look like?
Mm-hmm.
And it is outstanding how people who never even thought about that challenge before can come up with suggestions.
Yeah.
And they don't even have to know much about the topic because you can encourage them to, even if you've seen it in a motion picture or in a TV series, put it on the list.
Right. And there's a lot of tools for this, like
the strategic appreciative inquiry, for example.
Right. I love that if you had a magic wand, or there's like the imagine in 5 years we're all high-fiving each other because we were so successful. What happened? Yeah. Right? Like that exercise. So I love those exercises. I appreciated this article because even though like this isn't new, I don't feel like this is new. But because that's one of the things in organizations that makes me want to cry is when nobody wants to take 5 minutes to just paint the future. And we just like, what can we do today that's possible and we don't even want to think about it.
Yeah. So the method that the folks at Strategic Doing have, it's an art. Nobody's ever going to perfect it, but it's an art, and it's different everywhere, is to start with getting it, is for everybody to commit to resolving a challenge. So I say the challenge is to reduce opium overdose deaths by 50% in 2 years. Then ask the question, so what would have to be true if you could change everything for that to happen?
Right.
And
question.
It's amazing how they set aside all their differences in the room.
Yeah.
And they're willing to surface their biases.
Yeah.
Positive and negative biases towards the challenge. So I think that, you know, that idea of starting from the end backwards, which I've used in change management and or design, it's a pretty powerful thing to have learned.
Yeah, agreed. Any comments, others, on this article? What you thought? How it made you feel? Richard, Maria, Jeffrey, anybody? I did like that article that it clicked into about the wise power. And there was a quote in there that I wrote down that I liked called "Beyond the Illusion of Full Control, Wise Power is an Art of Surprise." So I thought that was a good quote. I don't know exactly what it means, but I like, you said art, Jim. So it's the art of surprise. Yeah. Thank you, Maria. It was nice having you on. Hopefully we see you next month. All right. Anyone want to venture a thought on what the theme was? Or what you think the theme is? I guess there's no preconceived theme, but we can come up with one.
To me, the theme was something about adapting to new realities, helping our clients adapt to new realities, AI, hybrid working, the breakdown of hierarchical organizations. I mean, all of those are... these are the business challenges our clients are facing. How can we help them?
Yeah.
Great. What do you think, Jim?
Same as what Richard said, and I'd add, and to help them relate what they feel and know to something they can to something they can do about it. So a lot of senior leaders just don't know what bogs things down in their organizations. They assume things and they sometimes fund big actions, but you know, they'll fund an action in IT that is counterproductive to an action that HR is taking. And neither HR or IT is going to say anything, because if they do, they'll lose budget and possibly lose people.
That's such a good insight. That's like a whole, we could talk about that for a whole hour. Let's find an article on that you write.
I don't write articles. I write little snippets.
Cool. Well, I think we're at the end of our time early today because we had a small group, but this is always such a fruitful discussion. There were a few things that came up, Tanya, that I'd like to include when you send out the... when you send out the video, but I will find them. And if Jim wants to send anything, I got the books you mentioned, but the Adaptive Leadership Community or whatever it was called would be
ALN. I will. If we hold on a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes, I'll put that in the chat for you, Tanya.
Okay.
Or do you want to email it to you?
Whichever's fine.
I'll email.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Thank you all for an awesome conversation, as always.
And Jardina, thank you for jumping in and keeping things moving forward. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Oh, wait, before you say, you might even be going to say this, or that's not a complete sentence. Anyway, are either of you, any of you three, going to the conference in a couple of weeks?
Not.
Oh, I won't be seeing you this year. Okay. Sad. Miss you. All right, Tanya. Right.
Well, then for James or Jim and Rich know what's going on, so I don't need to go through my what's coming up spiel. So,
okay.
Yeah, just make a comment that my partners and I are looking at all these conferences and just having to make some tough choices. So our hearts will be in Minneapolis. A couple of my clients are in Minneapolis, and I was trying to arrange a work plan that would get me there, but couldn't quite make it.
Well, we'll miss you both this year.
Yeah, it's going to be a big group and a mix up of internal, external, as we always have, and new and first time attendees and repeats. So I don't think, Jim, you've made it yet. So we'll have to come up with a way to get you to.
Not been to one.
You haven't? Oh, my goodness.
Too much travel going on. I've got lots of nice family things to deal with. And after taking care of some not so nice family things for the last year.
Well, maybe we'll come up with a destination for 2025 that's so awesome it's worth the travel.
Where do you live, Jim?
Wilmington, North Carolina, Southeast North Carolina.
That's where we're going to have it next year, I heard. Maybe.
The town would love to have you.
Raleigh-Durham, and that makes it equidistant for us to drive.
Raleigh is just a hop, skip, and a jump for me.
Me too.
I think we're going to go west of the Mississippi next year.
We haven't
been there since 2019, so it's time to make it a little easier for the West Coast folks to get in. But
And April's not a bad time to visit Arizona.
No, not at all.
Well, we tapped 100 a couple times this weekend, but our mornings are still in the upper 50s or 60s. So,
yeah, I've done conferences in Phoenix at 110. That's no problem.
You're inside. It's dry heat. So, yeah, you're inside. You're in air conditioning. This time of year, the mornings and evenings are still wonderful. So it was 62 when I hiked this morning. So.
Just need a remote start on your car and
find the only tree in the parking lot and park in the shade.
Okay, bye all.
All right. Nice seeing you all. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.